Welcome, everyone, to the North Salt Lake City Council meeting for August 15th, 2023. Wendy, we're recording. Thank you. I'd like to welcome everyone, and our first item is to have a thought and the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Baskin, once she does her chair adjustment.
I'm going to share just a thought that's come to mind, and the thought is that it's sort of one of life's cruel jokes, maybe, that when we suffer, in the end, if we live long enough, we can go back and try to cure somebody else's suffering that is similar, and because we have experienced it and can empathize with it. And in the newspaper this week, in our bountiful in the Daily Journal, there was an article featuring the maternity home that helps women facing crisis pregnancies find hope. And in the newspaper, we see our good mayor in the picture as they're doing a ribbon cutting on this facility. And it's a facility to help birth moms make decisions and get the care they need if in case they want to adopt or make other plans. It's called the Lamb of God. There's three things I wanted to read from it because I found it so fascinating. The woman who runs it, her name is Grace Delaney, and she said, "I was a birth mom myself," said Grace Delaney, founder and CEO. "I was a single mom with two young kids." That was when she was living in San Diego and whatnot. And then what she says further is, "This last fall, Nathan Ricks, who had been a dear friend for 32 years, said he wanted to get a home here in Utah. He'd made it clear to his family that he wanted to help Grace close the gap. On January 2nd, he was killed in a plane crash in Provo. It was a devastating blow to his family and all of us. It was 2 days later that Delaney got a call from his wife. She said, we know where we want people to donate instead of flowers. In 3 weeks, they had raised $540,000. Along with other donations, we were able to buy the house with cash here in North Salt Lake. The program provides 24/7 wraparound care, Delaney said. A lot of the women come to us very broken, financially and physically. We give them a safe space where they can have quiet, shut out all the noise, and sit with their pregnancy to make the right plan for their baby. That's all. Please stand with me and we'll recite the Pledge of Allegiance together.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Baskin. Next item is citizen comment. If there's someone here that would like to address the council, particularly items that are not on our agenda, please come forward, state your name and address. Okay, we'll move on. Thank you. Next item is a public hearing and consideration of an ordinance 2023-10, an ordinance adopting and codifying the new Chapter 11 of Title 9 of the City Code relating to impact fees. Sherry?
Thank you. So as Wendy and I were going through the code looking for areas that we needed to update for the noticing requirements with as far as the dates and newspapers, we had noticed in this section that there were some sections that needed to be updated. And as we prepared that draft, we had them reviewed by our city attorney, and he noticed a lot of deficiencies in this particular section of code. It was quite outdated and was not in conformance with state code. And so he went ahead and rewrote this section for it, so it will be repealing in its entirety Title IX, Chapter 11, and replacing it with the text you have. Essentially, it will make this section of the code compliant with state code as far as impact fees. It does require a public hearing for the adoption of this, but it basically just brings us into conformance with state code on our processing for impact fees and makes it possible to do your next two agenda items after this one. If you have any specific questions about the verbiage in there, I'm happy to answer that or have the city attorney address those.
Any questions?
Is this the stuff we went over in our last meeting? Is it?
This is.
Or is this new?
This is all new.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, the old section had verbiage in it about the specific adoption of previous impact fees, which is not necessary to be in the text of the code. In fact, what needs to be in the text of the code is how do we go through the process of implementing impact fees. And so that's what this is putting in the process for adopting impact fees in the city, which we've always followed the processes under state code. It's just now codifying it in our ordinance in conformance with state code.
Any questions?
I'll turn it to you for the public hearing.
I'll open it up now for a public hearing on this matter. If there's anyone that would like to address the council regarding this ordinance, please come forward. I will now close the public hearing, and Wendy will pretend that that lasted a minute. And for the minutes, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Ordinance 2023-10, an ordinance amending the North Salt Lake City Code, Title IX, Chapter 11, related to impact fee enactment with the following findings. One, the proposed amendment will increase efficiency in the administration of development applications, including the imposition of impact fees, and two, the proposed amendment codifies Chapter 11 in accordance with the provision of the Utah Impact Fees Act.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start on this side with Lisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes unanimously. Next item is public hearing and consideration of Ordinance 2023-12, an ordinance establishing an impact fee policy and adopting storm drain system impact fees on development activities within the city.
What happened to 11?
Oh, sorry, I skipped one. There I go, Wendy, I was trying to get you out of here. Sorry. Let's go back one. Public hearing, consideration of Ordinance 2023-11, an ordinance establishing impact fee policy and adopting water system impact fee for development activities. Ken?
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to, before we have our expert come and address us, which is, who is Keith Larson with Bowen Collins. You'll remember visiting with Keith previously. We hired Bowen Collins a long, long time ago to do water and storm drain master planning for the city. They've assisted the city with a new water rate structure, which we're very appreciative of and which we're in the second year of implementing. This was a bold leap of faith for the city council to expend a significant amount of city resources on new master plans for these services. But I can tell you that the city is it's well prepared to meet the future as far as water and storm drain, both in daily service and in long-range facilities planning. What we're doing tonight is adopting new impact fees for water, in the case of this public hearing and this ordinance. This is important, and as a quick reminder, impact fees are not related to water rates, but they are one-time fees charged on new development for that are supposed to cover the costs of facilities of citywide importance in the water system, and they're supposed to cover their share of those facilities. But it's for new development, and it's not for maintenance. We don't use these funds in the Water Enterprise Fund as operational funds or in the general fund for general purposes. These are for impact fees only. So with that, I'll let Keith make a presentation on our proposed water impact fees.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. I was going to give a little explanation, but Ken did such a great job. I will jump straight in. Utah Impact Fee Act describes in a lot of detail exactly what needs to happen to put into effect impact fees. And the first part of that is to prepare an impact fee facility plan, which basically comes out of the master plan and identifies what kind of capacity future development is going to use in the system. So I'm going to just thumb through this really quick. This is a reminder of what we looked at in the master plan a number of months ago. So for water, the major findings were for available supply, you're in good shape, but you do need to expand your contract with Weber Basin a little bit for reliability. Conservation is an essential part of what we're trying to do moving forward, so we need to keep the eye on the ball there. Great news is that you have enough storage, you have enough pumping capacity. However, there is some need for permanent backup generators from a redundancy and reliability standpoint. And then pipelines, there's a few projects scattered through the city, but your biggest need there is just the ongoing maintenance and upkeep of the system. So this is just a quick, if you remember, this is a graph of your projected demands versus your supply. The solid black line is without conservation. The dashed black line is with conservation. And I'm not sure what color that is, kind of red-brown color there at the top, is with a little bit of extra redundancy. You can see the pink at the top represents some additional culinary water supply that you should have in the long term, but in pretty good shape if you can hit your conservation goals. This map just summarizes some of the major rehabilitation and replacement projects. You can see there's a pretty good chunk of work that needs to be done in the planning window. And so just again, a reminder that maintaining the system, even though the system's in great shape, we need to maintain it. Okay, so overall, we've identified $33 million worth of capital projects. About half of that is rehabilitation and replacement. So that is independent of impact fees, but the other items are associated or could be associated with growth. And so the second step, and this is just a reminder of the funding plan that we put together, slowly raise rates over time to be able to sustainably fund the system, use some bonding and cash reserves up front to take care of some of your most pressing needs in the system. So as Ken mentions, we're in good shape moving forward to address the needs of the system. Okay, so the second part of the impact fees is that we need to identify how much capacity is being used by future growth. You have these in your packet, I assume, so I won't spend a lot of time on this, but let's just look at one example. First, we look at the existing facilities that you have out there, and we'll take production. That's your ability to produce water, your wells, your connections to get water into the system. For what you have, 82.5% of that capacity will be used by your existing residents. However, 6.1% it will be used for projected growth in the next 10 years and 11.4% for growth beyond 10 years. So now what we can do if we just drop down below, we can see that the value of that infrastructure, the documented value is $4.5 million. So of that, $275,746 should be allocated towards growth in the next 10 years, if you're following that math. You work over to the side to the total, and for impact fee purposes, you need to collect $2.4 million to reimburse funds to existing users for the capacity that they've already built in the system. That makes sense to everybody? Okay, so then for future projects, we're going to build some future projects, and we go through and we do the exact same exercise. These are projects that we've identified in the 10-year window. How much is going to growth and existing users? And if you go down to the bottom of the 10-year cost, we have $1.6 million worth of future costs that need to be recovered from future users. So what do? We take the total cost, we divide it by the projected amount of growth, and we get a cost per ERC or equivalent residential connection. This is a standard residential home. Would pay in 2023, would pay at the bottom there $5,664 in impact fee. By way of comparison, for a similar property currently, let's see. Oh, actually, I'm going to move forward. I thought I had that number. Do you have that, Karen, by way, chance? Okay, I'm gonna think through it here just a second. Okay, so the one other thing that we do, and the reason that it's not totally directly comparable, is we've changed this just a little bit to achieve better fairness. What we're proposing is to charge an indoor water impact fee of $1,641. This would be in 2023, and you'll notice that increases a little bit each year. And then based on the amount of irrigated acreage or outdoor water use, there would be a fee. And so for a typical lot, which would be a single family home at up to 0.17 acre lot size, would be that $5,664. And then depending on the lot size, that could increase or decrease. And for some reason, I have not written it down here, but my recollection is that this is an increase of about 10 to 15%. Again, it's a little bit different because we've put in the scale here, but that's the increase there. So I'll stop there and entertain any questions, and then.
I had one, but maybe for Ken. Didn't we receive like a FEMA grant or some federal funding to put in generators?
Yes, we do have that coming.
It's coming still, okay. So will that take care of that?
We could look at that. I don't know if it would, how much it would change the impact fee.
Yeah, and the backup generators are not actually in the fee.
They're not.
That was treated as a existing deficiency.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, my question, I guess, is do we have funds sufficient to erase the deficiency?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
Unrelated to impact fees, as you said. Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? You did too good of a job, I guess.
I have one question. This is Alvin. What kind of a facility would be covered by an impact fee that could be contemplated in the future for our water storage? I mean, if you were to build a little water building and have your water, your control operator in that little building, that would be covered, would it not? That's not considered new construction.
A portion of it could be.
Just a portion?
Yeah. So the easiest example is if you have an area of new development and you need to build a pipeline out to it, then 100% of that pipeline could be covered. Let's say you build a new shed for a piece of equipment for your water and you need to store it there. But that piece of equipment will benefit all the users in the system, then we could only use the portion associated with future growth. So, you know, it'd be 6% or something like that. And existing users would pay the other 80%. I think we need a public hearing, and then I'm coming back.
Any other questions? Oh, thank you. I'll now open this up for a public hearing. If there's anyone here to address the council on this, please come forward. I will now close the public hearing and entertain a motion on this ordinance.
I move that the City Council adopt ordinance number 2023-11, an ordinance establishing an impact fee policy and adopting water system impact fees on development activities within the city of North Salt Lake.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, Ted? Nope. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That ordinance passes. Now let's do, we'll have a public hearing in consideration of ordinance 2023-12, an ordinance establishing the impact fee policy and adopting storm drain system impact fees on development activities within the city.
So I think we can turn this one right over to Keith.
Okay.
Okay. And I think we can do this one even quicker as we set the baseline here for water. And I just looked that up. It's actually a little over 20% increase. So hooray, I could figure it out. All right. Storm drain. So a little bit of information up top about the design criteria that we use for evaluating. Available capacity. Most of the city looks pretty good. However, there are some facilities that need additional improvements or increases in size to carry projected design flows. There are also a limited number of pipes that need to be replaced based on condition. Just like in the water, we need to keep that up. And then there are also some open channels that we're recommending some pipes through steep hillsides to be able to more efficiently convey storm flows. So in this particular case, it's easiest just to look at the map. This is the west side of the city. And you can see there's a very limited number of improvements here, just four small improvements identified here, including one section to pipe an open channel. As we go to the east, there are more improvements. Let's see. Turn it off. Let me just click it forward for me. Okay, so I'm going to tell you, we'll look at that picture here in a second if we can get it. But there's an increasing number of improvements on that side. In your packet is the tables with all the allocation of costs. Once again, the exact same thing that we did. In the storm water system, there's about $5.5 million worth that need to be collected via impact fees associated with that. So if we can get eventually to the maximum allowable impact fee, we are proposing a fee in 2023 of about $2,300 per acre. That's an increase from the current that is approximately $2,100 per acre. So that's where we're about 10% there, 10% increase. So if we have any luck here, we'll try. And there. Oh, there we go. There's the improvements on the east side. You can see there's a number of additional improvements there, just building capacity coming off the hillside, providing additional improvements. And then, as mentioned, we go through the same process. Lots of numbers here. They're too small to read, so we'll keep moving. Existing capacity, 173,000 to recover in the existing system. I said 5.6 to recover, but there's 5.6 million in total future costs, another 500,000 to recover through impact fees there. And then here are the fees that I mentioned. 2023, we're at 2318. As mentioned, that compares to 2100 historic. There is a small area remaining in what's called Service Area 2. That's a reimbursement area where a developer helped front some money for the development of that area. Because of that, there's some additional internal piping that needs to be paid back, and so there's a significantly higher fee there. And again, that one represents an increase from $12,200 per acre up to the $13,107. And I believe, Karen, there's just a few properties remaining there, not much in terms of development. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You have to forgive my ignorance. Explain the user-free credit.
Okay, yeah, that's great. So oftentimes when we build infrastructure, we don't have the cash on hand, so we will go and we'll take out a bond to build that infrastructure. And when a person comes in and pays an impact fee, they're paying for their capacity, but they will also, through their user fees, they will help pay the bond over time. And so the amount that they'll help pay the bond gets credited up front, so they're not paying twice, basically. And that's also why that number drops down over time, is as the bond gets paid off. Good question.
With our with those needs, go back to the east side. Those are all replacements at this point?
It's a mixture. There's replacements. There's several areas where we're just piping existing open channels that are challenged for maintenance. Now.
I guess my question here would be, and maybe Karen can jump in, but we're in this trade-off of replenishing the aquifer and filling up the lake. And have we addressed that in this proposal, where we're not going to divert too much water away from our aquifer and while we're refilling the lake?
So most of these are existing channels or facilities that tie one detention basin to another or have ravine flow channels that don't have pipes located in them. So most of the projects that have been identified as required infrastructure are required. And the idea of that we've talked about before, how to look for replenishment for location that would reach back to the aquifer. Our target areas, primarily locations in the golf course, and the upper bench areas. And so some of these projects, one that we're just finishing, Bowen Collins is actually doing the design, is looking for that kind of relocation instead of sending it down through these pipes, instead of enlarging one of these pipes to take that extra flow, we're re-diverting it back to the lake at the golf course. To use in that detention basin, which does recharge the aquifer. Okay. So some, but there's more projects for that recharge to come in the future.
Great, thank you.
I just had one question. Seems like in the past we kind of made a little bit of a diversion. In fact, I don't remember how many years it goes back, but seemed like we used to base the impact fees on how far somebody was from the Jordan River, because that's where all the water goes. And obviously, if you're right next to it, your impact on the storm drain system is 10 feet, where if you're up on the top of the hill, you're a lot farther than 10 feet. So I don't know if that was ever addressed in your study, that the distance from the Jordan River, or if there was sectioned off in lower part of the city or the west side of the city versus the east side of the city.
So the decision was made to match the approach of the current impact fee, which looks at the city as a whole. You could break it into multiple areas. The way I like to think about it, and there are virtues to both approaches. There's pros and cons. The way I like to think about it, though, is even if you are right next to the Jordan River or an outfall and don't use a lot of infrastructure, when you drive your kids to school or you go to the library or you or anywhere else in the city, you are benefiting from those roads and being able to safely travel through the city, not just the benefits to your immediate property. So we could have done it either way, but we chose to keep it the way that it had been, and that's to look at it as a, we all work together.
And may I try to answer that sure. question too? I think in the early 2000s, when we entered into an agreement for Area 2, which includes the detention ponds in Eaglewood Village, which we talked about in the work session, I think the city made the decision to collect impact fees in the way that it does now, which is Area 1 and Area 2. And it would have been nearly impossible to account for credits and come up with a new system to do it by basin. And so early in this process with Bowen Collins, it was important to me that we simply honor the Service Area 2 contracts that still exist. And since we're not a high growth city, that is, we don't have large areas that are still undeveloped, I didn't see a reason to really change the philosophy or the methodology for the storm drain impact fee, if that helps.
That helps. Thank you.
Where is Area 2?
So
I think we have a map here.
I think there
the
is
end.
A map. There it is. So Area 2 is this area on the bottom, the smaller area on the bottom of the map.
Okay.
And it drains a portion of the Eaglewood development down to, and as I said, the ponds where the water ends up is in Eaglewood Village. And Area 1 is basically the rest of the city.
Thanks.
I have one more question. This is mostly for Karen. Go forward two slides where you have the future work with the red. Keep going. Right there. Go back. Right there. Right there, it looks like there's this big project down by Deer Holler Basin. It's a big red thing, which where I kind of live. I recommended capital. Is that just increasing the pipe size? Right there on off of the, is that all that is?
Is that arrow at the right spot? HD06?
HD01. Down on the west side of this picture. A little bit over.
Yes.
That red. All that red. What's
yes.
that?
So those are upsizing pipes from 12-inch to 15 or 18-inch.
Okay. And so, Karen, how long is that going to take?
So we have been we're hopeful that the change in rate structure that City Council has already approved, we have currently allocated all of the available storm drain funds for projects this year and next year. We are spending every penny that we have available to us because many of these projects are overdue. What year that one will be done, I don't know off the top of my head.
It was mostly just joking.
It's in the 10-year plan.
You want lead time so you can put your house on the market?
We've had some pretty good storms.
Yeah. Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll now open the public hearing. If there's anyone from the public here to address the council on this ordinance, please come forward.
D. Lawless, and so is that on? So that you take more than a minute, are there any of these storm drain situations that are impacting safety or danger or something that, you know, Lisa asked about that one. Is that causing a problem or is it sufficient for the next whatever, and it's not going to cause any problems. It just needs to be bigger. So do we have any of these areas up here that are dangerous to the city?
So we do not currently have any locations where health and safety are at risk. Some of the facilities are undersized, but primarily it's about erosion in the canyons and wear and tear and maintenance. And as additional impervious services are added and more water is added, it's been identified which pipes need to be upgraded for future demand, as well as to prevent deterioration of the existing system. But everybody's very safe.
And I'll just answer that question by saying it depends on how much it rains, because we've had some pretty wild storms in the foothills. So.
We've only had 300-year storms in the last 3 years. Yeah.
And if you can dodge the garbage cans flying down the hillside
and the manhole covers, Anyone else to address the council? I will close the public hearing, and I will entertain an motion on this ordinance.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council adopt Ordinance Number 2023-12, an ordinance establishing an impact fee policy and adopting storm drain system impact fees on development activities within the City of North Salt Lake.
Thank you.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Alisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of preliminary design plan and final plat for Union Court subdivision located at 25 and 95 East Union Avenue.
Thank you. So this is located over on Union Avenue. These are a couple of lots. This is how the lots are already parceled out. They're not in an existing subdivision. They're just parceled out. And the lot that you see on the left-hand side, you can see that it has a big vacant area in the back. They want to sell portion of their lot to the lot that's on your right-hand side. And so they've come forward to us requesting a subdivision plat. Both of the two lots meet the minimum lot sizes for the zone minimum frontage. They're all both over 2 acres in size. One of the things that comes into play with this is that grassy area or that vegetative area has been a storm drain retention area for the property that's on the west. And the property on the east actually didn't have any storm drainage or a retention area. And so as part of this plat, what will be happening is that they've submitted some construction drawings. They'll do a cross easement access for drainage, for storm drainage retention, and they'll share the retention there, do some underground storage as they improve the property to better utilize it for their business, but also solve those problems related to storm drainage and retention on the site. And so our ordinance allows the preliminary and final plat to be processed together. There were a few red line corrections that we felt comfortable recommending to the Planning Commission as a condition of approval, because we knew that the next time they were going to be able to get before the City Council, because of your September meeting schedule and the primary and the five Tuesdays, or that it would be a whole nother 5 weeks before they were able to get to you if we didn't get them on this agenda. So there were some minor red line engineering corrections that are conditional upon your approval of this plat. But the Planning Commission has made a favorable recommendation with those red line corrections being taken care of prior to the plat being recorded.
Thank you. Any further questions?
What kind of business is it, manufacturing, distribution?
So, I believe it's not working anymore. Won't go backwards. I believe the one on the east side is a pipe, I can't remember the name of it, but it is, they do some sort of, like propane or petroleum. Yeah. liquid petroleum, and the other one is, I'm not sure what the manufacturing business that they did, but it's all self-contained within their building.
It used to be a storage facility, I know, for moving company, but that was a long time ago. Last time I was in that building.
So it's a propane storage facility, is that what you said?
Liquid petroleum.
Hi, I'm Cal Johnson, Legend Engineering. I'm the civil engineer for the project. Yeah, the eastern property, those tanks down on the south side are propane storage tanks. And so they store there and distribute from there. And then the property on the west, currently I don't know what the warehousing and distribution is, like what the products are or anything that like that, but it's warehouse and distribution.
Okay, thanks.
The notes for this proposal say that both properties use that piece of land for drainage. What is draining on that land?
So just their surface draining from when there's storms, so it retains it on site and goes into that site.
So, not manufacturing draining.
Right, so right. It's just basically from storms, storm drain.
Any further questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council approve the preliminary design plan and the final plat for the two-lot subdivision called Union Court, located at 25 and 95 East Union Avenue, with the following condition: correction of all red lines on the plat and construction drawings.
Thank you. Stan?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Natalie. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Next item is the John Rueckert Show. He's going to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, Mayor, would you mind if we
I apologize.
Altered the agenda a minute?
Let's we're going to drop down to Tyler's item so that he can get out of here.
Thanks, Mayor and Council. I'll stay as long as I can this evening too. So, I've got four pieces of equipment to bring to you for approval. Just to go through the list, you've seen it in the memo, but we have Ventrac, which is a replacement for our current snowblower, along with some other all-season attachments, a Toro aerator, a Workman HDX spray rig, and an Air 2 G2 machine. I looked up the replacement dates, and I'll give you some background there, but the Ventrac, the old snowblower is 2010. The old Tor Pro Core aerator was originally 1995, and then our current Workman HDX spray rig was 2005. So we've got a good useful life out of those pieces of equipment. Like I mentioned in the memo, our Pro Core aerator broke in 2015 and was surplus in 2016. So we've gone several years without that piece of equipment, which is mostly for greens and tee boxes. The Ventrac, I think, is a good opportunity for us to get a machine that not only plows the snow a little bit better up there, but also gives us opportunity to use that on the golf course for other things, so like aerating the fairways, aerating smaller areas, seeding, trenching. We have a lot of trees that we need to mulch. So there's some accessories there that we've gotten that's bringing that total up to that 75, that we can get some extra use out of it rather than a 2-3 month use for snow plowing. Like I mentioned, the ProCore, that will be for greens and tees. The Air 2 G2 machine, we're currently renting, we're paying actually someone to come. It's a deep tine aerator, so that's the blue machine. It actually goes down 12 to 18 inches in the ground and uses air to kind of spread out underneath. It breaks up the compaction really deep for the roots to go down. So that in itself will pay over the years of the useful life for it. So rather than us paying someone to come and rent that machine, we'll kind of pay for itself if we have our own. And it gives us an opportunity, rather than using it once a year for $6,000, we can do it several times throughout the year. So any questions there? Or?
Which pitcher is the Air 2 G2 machine?
That's the blue one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the spray rig, that sprays fertilizer and stuff? Is that what
it's? Okay. So it's kind of, we use it everywhere on the golf course. So we do tees, fairways, rough. It's an expensive piece of machinery, but we pretty much spray all of our chemicals other than the green areas with that machine. So.
But that's a separate machine. That's not an attachment.
Yeah, I didn't have a good picture of the. It's basically a Workman, but it has a spray container on the back of it and then a spray rig that spreads out. So
I just
drive.
Thought that was a very expensive attachment, but
yeah.
It looks like it's a separate machine.
Yeah, it's a Workman together with that spray rig. A note on this, and really all the equipment, is with COVID, we are still seeing extreme delays with golf course equipment. I don't know if you remember when I originally requested this budget for this fiscal year, we were hoping to get fairway mowers. That's not looking like that's going to happen this year and maybe not even next fiscal year. We're still hoping on some lease returns, like I mentioned in this slide, that will keep our costs lower. Even with this machinery that I'm asking you for today, that Workman HDX spray rig will be, we're thinking we can get it in this early spring and May, but that's still a questionable. We may not be able to get that, so I'm bringing it to you as best case scenario that we can get all of these pieces of equipment before this fiscal year ends.
And if you don't get it, is there a place you rent it from or something, or what do you do?
We'll continue to use our spray rig, especially the one we have, and kind of band-aid it together through this
okay, year. Okay, so you still have a piece of equipment, mm-hmm. You just can't. It's just about ready to give up, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that one was 2005. So.
Okay.
Are they guaranteeing price?
Yeah, so we've been on a two-buy list for 2 years on all of these, and Turf is great with kind of locking that price in. As soon as we wanted to get on that list, they sent us quotes with the price, and they've kind of held to those, which is nice because on those quotes it does say subject to change on price, but they've been really good to work with and keep it where it's at. So
is it possible that golf courses could rent out our machines to adjacent golf courses if they need them?
We've actually talked about doing that with Air 2 G2 machine because there's a lot of golf courses that use the same company we're using that they're renting it from. So we may reach out to them and just see what they're doing, and we hate to give away our trade secrets. I mean, some of them aren't using that machine, so yeah. Ultimately that one, so I don't want to get too far into it, I'm delaying the meeting, but when you aerate the greens, it's less desirable to play on. This Air 2 G2 machine leaves little interruption for play on the green surface, so not only is it going to save us as far as renting, but it ultimately saves us money on playability of the golf course because we're not impacting it as much as other golf courses do. So I would say that $45,000 will pay for itself in a couple of years.
Great.
So, and in play and renting. So
I'm diverting from this for a second. Golf course is doing very well, I assume.
Yes. Yeah.
I've just never seen so many golf balls in my yard, and you have to be really bad to get my yard.
That's true.
And I'm just amazed.
Go across two lots in a road.
Yeah, I just.
And I'll have a presentation later this fall on the golf course, but yeah, record June and record July, and we're looking like a record August.
You may want to advertise lessons a little more.
We got the GPS units are on, so maybe we'll throw a little advertisement on there. Hole 13 tee box lessons.
Wow. I can't believe you get balls in your yard. They don't stay there long, though, do they? They probably roll back down to the road.
No, I pick them up, and I lose them on other golf courses.
What?
Any further questions on this?
No.
Do I have a motion?
I can make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of the new Toro Workman HDX four-wheel drive diesel under Utah State Contract MA2188 from Turf Equipment Irrigation Inc. for the price not to exceed $45,000. Do we do each one of these separate, then, I take?
I think I've got the ones. Total.
Because that was
one. Yeah, that was.
You just did John's, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought that was kind of low.
Ken, I believe we can do these all at once. So
yes, I think the motion is written, so you can just do them at once, all at once.
Let me get past John's here. But that's still, okay, maybe that still is. All right, I can see it here, sorry. I did skip. Okay, I move the City Council approve the purchase of the golf course equipment as presented in the amount of $235,612.12, and not a cent more.
Second.
Thank you. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Elisa?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Tyler. All right, John. We'll go back to your four items.
Awesome. All right. Well, tonight I bring to you the FlexNet system. This is for radio reading meters. So currently we're using an AMR system to read the meters, which is a unit that we bought back in like 2004. We're still using the same unit about 20 years later to read meters. We bought an additional unit to read the upgraded radios. I think it was 2014. And these are just put in a vehicle and they're driven around the city once a month. So with this system, this is the FlexNet network by Census. It uses a fixed base transceiver, so it's a tower, and it collects readings hourly. And this is useful for residents and for city staff here because we have different analytics that we can do. This is just a shot of the dashboard that like our utility billing can see for an account. There's different ways you can look at the data. You can just kind of look at these hourly graph readings, or you can actually see the register readings. You can expand or contract the time that you're looking at this graph. So it gives you a lot more powerful tools and granular data to work with than troubleshooting things for customers. This is a customer portal. This is the other benefit that this system brings is better data for the customer. And you can see this shot. It shows like their current usage, what they used the previous month, and then what their usage was at the same time last year broken out. They can set up SMS and email notifications for different usage, like if they don't want to exceed a certain amount. I'll go to that slide real quick. So this is where you configure those alarms. So they can configure these for daily, weekly, or the billing cycle of to not exceed, and it will send them messages. So it's still unclear if we could incorporate the, you know, our tiered structure into this, but I'm sure you could use that as a guide to say, I don't want to exceed, you know, X number of gallons, because I know I'm going to go into the second tier. So I'll go back to this one. This is just another shot of like their usage. You can break that out by the 7-day, 30-day, or 12-month. It puts the average, the temperature readings for the day, if there was rainfall. So this should be a great tool for people to help manage their, you know, irrigation usage better than they can now. So with that, we kind of started this back in 2018, and then we ran into shortages with COVID, and we had waited a long time for meter stuff to get stocked back in. Currently, we have all of the meters that we had on back order. They're sitting on our shelf down at the Public Works building, but we're still waiting for 700 radios. And when I wrote the memo, they said they had estimated 60 days, and that still seems to be a moving target. But with that, those 700 additional radios, we have 7,200 meter accounts, and there'll still be an additional need of like 3,600 radios and some additional water meters that need to be purchased. So right now we're about 40% complete with the system. with these radios that can read into this. And if everything goes good and we get our orders in, we can start setting meters and we could be up to a 70% build out by 2024. And at 25, we could be into an 85% system completion and just catch the remaining 15%. So there is some capital need over the next 3 to 4 years as we build out this system that we'll budget for. The customer portal system, it's sold as a software as a service, and it's kind of in a tiered rate. You kind of had the estimates of what those cost per connection to the system. So with the 2,800 services is about $30,000, up to where we get up to the build out of our system is 7,500 plus services will be $53,000. That usually has about a 3% increase annually for that that software cost. So what's included in this purchase tonight is the two base stations that we will need to read these meters, some installation certification, some one-time software costs for deployment, and with that, it was Mountain Lance Supply that is our supplier for these, and the bid is $203,800. So if there are any questions about that.
I guess only question I have, John, is the technology going to change before we get this all deployed, and then we'll have to start all over again?
Well, they've been using this technology actually since when we deployed our first system, so it's been around for a long time, and they're continually improving the software capabilities of it. I think I don't know what else they would really go to be honest with you.
The software looks kind of pricey to me in the sense that how much does it cost to run somebody around the city with a truck? But this is $53,000 a year, is what you're saying?
Yes, $53,000 a year. So, and okay. Some of that that cost could be as we encourage more of these billing accounts to go to paperless, could be recovered by that. The cost that we send out paper bills.
Okay.
You identified that it does not currently work with our conservation rate structure. Would it be better to find a system that does?
I'm not sure if it could have that incorporated into it. They were in the process of doing some updates to it, so I'm not sure what they're, and that the distributor couldn't tell me what those updates included.
I just feel like if we aren't talking about the conservation structure, and if it's not showing up on bills, then it's not really a conservation structure because no one knows what they need to do to save money. So I think this looks great, but I would prefer it if there was a way that the software could include those steps.
Well, can't the residents go online and monitor their
alarms? Yeah, the customer portal, they can set up those alarms, those alerts for the usage
but
amount.
There's actually no information about the levels in the customer portal.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you could include that or not.
So do you mind if I answer that question? That's a great question and an important piece of helping residents to conserve. I think that's something that we will work to include in the portal, even if we have to work with this company to create a new field or whatever we have to do. I think it's really important for folks to be able to compare their usage, see where the tiers are all in the same place, and make it as convenient as possible. The other thing I would say is what you're looking at today, what we're asking you to authorize today is just one piece of a larger conservation program. You saw that it's a multi-year program. And I think that it's going to be a critical, the most critical piece of our conservation effort is when a customer or a user can see and understand the impact of their watering habits on their usage and on their bill. And so we'll absolutely have to make the connection that you're talking about, where people can see that. And granted, maybe we haven't shown that today, but we'll work to make sure that we do. But I think the key here is really working towards being able to have customers see how much they water during summer weeks when it's really hot and it's not raining, and how that impacts their bill. I just have
concerns because we just approved a new water bill that also does not mention the conservation structure at all. And so if we're really thinking, yay, conservation structure, this is going to save water.
Yeah.
It's not going to save water if I can just look on the thing and not see it in perspective.
I couldn't agree more, and I can assure the council that we're going to work to make those connections so that people can see them, even if we have to write our own software or somehow get ourselves involved in creating software, because you can't have just that piece without customers seeing their bill. So I agree 100%. And can I work to make that happen?
Can I follow up that and suggest that we just put it on as an action item to have, it doesn't have to be an agenda item, but just to report back, hey, we've figured out the software deployment to address the issue, so we just track it.
Great. And I would also say, this is not exactly related to your question, council member, but that there is some cost savings in the future as we move to maybe a paperless billing system, which John mentioned. Right now, it's about $4,000 a month we spend to send out bills. And I think we need to make significantly greater progress in transitioning to paperless for our customers. And I'm not suggesting tonight that we make that mandatory, because I don't know that you can go 100% mandatory, but we can certainly incentivize customers. We can give discounts for paperless. We can do other incentives to move people towards using their computers, using their phones, using these technologies to understand water usage better and how it impacts their bill.
If Ted's action item could also include to figure out a way to get it on the paper bill while we're still working towards that transition, that would be great.
Yeah, I think that's a great action item. Thank you for bringing that up.
I just wanted to comment, and I don't know if everybody here has the same thing I do, but I know that Rocky Mountain Power has gone to a system like this. I can see my power usage on a daily basis. And it was really great when I just kind of picked up on that. My air conditioner stopped working for a couple of days, and of course then I could see that it dropped way off those 2 days. And when I turned it back on, it went way up, you know, and I thought, well, this is great. This helps.
It's really great. In fact, in our house, we have solar panels, so last month my bill was $14. Isn't that amazing?
I'll trade you.
this is an expensive system, and so I'm not going to... I was concerned about this a little bit as we got ready for tonight's meeting, that this is a costly system. But in addition to the benefits of an aggressive conservation strategy, which is what I think we're continuing to authorize tonight, as we attend legislative policy meetings, as we attend the legislature every year, these are the kinds of systems that the Utah legislature is talking about making mandatory. And so I think that we're ahead. We're trying to be ahead and stay ahead. The legislature just mandated that all secondary water systems have to be metered, and it created a shortage, an 18 to 24 month shortage immediately in water meters. And so our public works guys were proactive about ordering meters, but as John said, the radios are not here, and it's really it's really a movement in the state of Utah. And so I guess I wanted to emphasize that North Salt Lake's not trundling down this road by itself. We are part of a larger movement and these things will be imposed upon us if we don't stay prepared. So I know it's a big ask. I recognize that. But I think it does meet the city's needs and the customers' needs.
Mayor, I have a question. Could you go back to the slide that had the thermometer on it? And then, John, my question to you is, the amount for tonight is, you know, slightly over $200,000, but that seems to represent only 20% of the total prepared costs moving forward. What portion have we already invested? So the total cost for this project, when it's completely done, it's at least $1 million, because that's the amount that, over $1 million is what is on the table right now. What have we already spent?
Oh, probably close to that, I would assume.
So
I don't know that number
right
off the top of
it.
Well, we spent at least 2,800 meters and the labor to install those meters, because our folks are installing the meters and the radios.
And sorry if you mentioned this, but how long do these things last?
The 20 years is the battery life on these.
Battery life. That's 20 years on the radio battery life?
Yes.
They don't have any other source of power?
No, they don't have any other source of power.
It's a long time for a battery.
So. Yeah, we've got stuff that was installed in 2004 that's still working.
Hmm. And then you have to replace the entire unit, not just the battery?
Yeah, you replace the entire meter and the radio at that time. They're all sealed inside.
Ready for a motion?
Hi.
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move the City Council approve the purchase of the Sensus FlexNet base station infrastructure for fixed-based water meter reading from Mountland Supply Company for $203,800.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion to second. Any further discussion?
I have further discussion. This is so expensive. And my question may have already been answered, because this is not the first time that this project has been brought up, nor has the first time it's been voted on. Is this the only place we can buy them? Is this our best deal? Is this the best system? Is this the most competitive system? It just kind of sell me on why I would vote to spend so much money on this.
Well, we've already, 40% complete with the system. This supplier is the only supplier in the state that sells the Sensus meters. So we can't go to another supplier out of state because they won't sell to us.
So we're waiting for the radios. What if they don't come? What if we spend this money today and we need to wait another 18 months for the radios? Have we jumped ahead? Should we wait for the radios first before we buy the software and the towers to read what the radios are sending?
We could read the 2,800 meters as soon as the radios are set up and deployed. So we can already read 40% of the system with what we have in the ground right now. So the hope is that the radios catch up to manufacturing needs and they get shipped out soon. So
let me follow up on that, because I don't think I understand. So we have about 40% installed right now, right?
Correct.
And you said we could read those right now.
Yes.
Do we use the information read from those? Or are we just waiting for all the radios to get here before the whole system is operational?
We would use the information for that's why the annual software as a service cost has stepped up as we increase the radio amount that are on the system.
Currently we're not using any of them.
We're doing it with the drive-by unit that we have in the truck. So we are collecting data, monthly data from them. So they are working in the ground now, but this system will allow it to collect the hourly data.
And what's in the ground right now is 40% of what we need.
Correct.
Got it. Thank you.
So is the question, I'm just trying to understand your question. With the installation of the two towers and the software, we will be able to, on 2,800 meters, we'll be able to look at this data as he described. Is that your
My question really revolves around the idea that this is so much money, and I want to feel confident that it is the right way to spend that money. So the last question that I asked was, of the 40% that are currently installed, are we using them at all, or have we already invested all this money and we're still just waiting on the next level and the next level before we could even use any of the infrastructure? But it sounds like the answer to that is no.
So yeah, so I think we are getting a benefit from the meters. We're not going to be able to read hourly and have this telemetry work without the towers. But that will also be an improvement, correct, John, when we get the towers installed.
So when will we implement the software where the residents can see it? Do we implement that now? Do we wait until we have more coverage, or do we wait until we have full coverage?
We could implement it immediately to those accounts. I mean, I guess there may be requests that we change stuff out, but we won't be able to until we have the rest of the radios.
I don't know that we've, as a staff, we've really talked much about that question. But I think we would want to use all of the capability that we have, even if it's only partial in the system. So, in other words, once we make this expenditure, we get the towers going, we would try to fully implement the system right now on everyone who had a meter and a radio.
Can I just ask, is there, as far as implementation, have we implemented it in a given geographical area in the city, or is it scattered all around?
They're scattered all over.
Just as you needed to change
as
meters?
Yeah, we've done like new construction and replaced meters. So anything that we've replaced since 2014 has been upgraded to these new radios.
Okay.
Please refresh my memory. What was the wait time on the radios?
Well, I had heard it's 60 days is what they were saying for fulfillment, but when we checked with them yesterday, they are still kind of on a moving target for that. I'm hoping that we get those, you know, soon before the end of the year and we can start.
Are you totally out of radios now, or do you have some that you haven't deployed?
We only have enough for new construction sets, so we're down to like the last of our radios right now.
Okay, yeah. Hopefully we get them in soon. I think I've already made my motion, Mayor.
We have a motion and a second. That's Ted.
Did you get a second?
Yeah, I second it. Aye.
Lisa? Whatever you do, turn your mic on.
Aye.
Aye.
No. Aye.
Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of a public works equipment purchase of Toro Workman for the price not to exceed $45,000.
Yeah. Well, we almost didn't have to talk about this. Stan almost made the motion earlier for us.
Yeah.
I didn't get a second, though, so.
Well, we'll talk about it again. So, yeah, this is actually the same rig that Tyler's buying that has a big spray tank in the back. So now you can kind of get a picture of that one that he didn't include. But this is replacing a 2002 Workman that was a hand-me-down from the golf course. A lot of the parts on it, like repair parts, have been discontinued by the manufacturer. And what makes these vehicles great is they have a really heavy load hauling capacity, and they don't damage the turf as you drive across it. We've had several repairs to the current machine that we have. Like the steering box went out, and they don't have that part anymore. So our mechanics actually found that a part from like a 1982 Jeep or something worked for us. They like cobbled this thing back together, and it has problems with the transmission sticking in gear. So the transmission could be going out on it, and that's one of the parts that are not offered anymore from the manufacturer. But turf equipment has indicated there's about an 18-month estimated back order time for these. We're asking to not exceed the price of $45,000 just to make sure that we don't go over the contract amount, that we don't, with the subject to increase with the that time amount. So, but they're usually pretty good at holding to their price, as Tyler said.
Any questions? This one looks a lot nicer than Tyler's, by the way.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of a new Toro Workman HDX 4WD diesel under Utah State contract Mod 20N188 from Turf Equipment and Irrigation Incorporated for a price not to exceed $45,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comment? Lisa?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. All right, John, we're halfway there.
All right.
Consideration of public work equipment purchase for 2023 trench compactor roller.
All right, so this is a piece of equipment that we've currently been renting for waterline installation, and trench compaction is really necessary to make sure you get it right for the longevity of the road, the asphalt pavement that goes on top, so you don't get any sinking spots.
Hey, hypothetically, could, you know, hypothetically, a city councilor write this?
Could they write? Could they write on it? Is that what
you... I'm going to stick with my... I'm going to stick with my Maserati.
Yeah.
Not.
You could. I don't know how much of a ride quality that would have.
It's a Bob the Builder moment for Ted.
Maybe you could drive it. It's remote operated. So, but this machine's actually helped out increase productivity of the waterline crew. They can actually lay about 20 more feet of pipe a day by using this machine, because it's not tying up the excavator to help compact the trench. We spend about $2,500 a month to rent that. That I looked around at a couple different rental places, and they were all about the same price. But this machine, it's got a useful life of 7+ years that we can get out of it, and it just makes more sense to purchase this machine outright. So with that, I'll leave it to your consideration.
How big is this?
It's like 36 inches wide and maybe 5.5 feet long. So it's pretty small. So it just fits down.
And
the
how much does it weigh?
How much does it weigh? I don't know the exact amount, but I think it weighs like 3,500 pounds. Yeah, it has. How many colors? It comes in orange.
So does it vibrate? Is it?
Yes, compact? It vibrates, or it can static roll.
Okay.
Mayor, I'm ready to make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of a 2023 Husqvarna model LP9505 trench compaction roller from Wheeler Machinery under the State of Utah Cooperative Contract MA3383 for the price of $34,875.
Second.
Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. John, you're now the proud owner of...
Of Ted's new parade float there.
Last item is consideration of a valve turning machine.
All right. So our original Wox trailer that we bought was purchased in 2007. And part of the problem with that is over time, as material goes whizzing into the holding tank at 80 plus miles an hour, or however fast it goes in there, it's slowly deteriorating. And it's where it's to the point where it's got holes and stuff in it that we've tried to patch up, and it's going to be where we can't patch it up anymore. So AWWA and the valve manufacturers all recommend you try to turn your valves once a year. And exercising the valves, it helps keep them so you can turn them off when you need to. And also with the vacuum, you clean out the boxes and makes them more accessible. So when you have the emergency situations or just routine shutdowns, you can do them faster and to a more isolated area. This equipment also operators, they track the torque settings of the valves so they can start to tell when valves are going bad and may need to be just dug up and replaced. This unit, it will allow us to create a smaller profile when we're out in the street to be just sit on the back of a truck. If you might recall, last year I brought in an F-550 vehicle that we're going to swap a bed on, and this is the equipment that's going to sit on this flatbed truck. So we'll take up a lot smaller profile out on the road. So with that, is there any questions?
How many valves are there?
Oh, I don't know the exact number, but we have like over 1,400 in the system.
I was just thinking, I think I was around when we bought the original one. So
I was.
Yeah. So I didn't know valves needed exercise. Yeah. Any further questions? Motion?
I move that the council purchase Wox skid-mounted valve turning machine from Intermountain Sales Incorporated for $87,697.98.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I have a quick question. This doesn't mention a contract. Have we put this out for bid? Are they the only people who sell it?
Yeah, they're a sole source provider of this,
okay.
This equipment. So.
Let's start with Lisa.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That's unanimous. Next item is approval of the council minutes from August 1st. Is there any changes, corrections, additions, subtractions?
I have one. First of all, these are so well done. They're always so well done. Particularly at the end of our council meeting when we had a spicy conversation, it is synthesized so well here with content being the focus, and I appreciate that. However, I would like to correct one piece, which is on line 610, where it indicates that I thought that the newsletter and City Hall and social media were at different tiers, which is true, but I would like it to show that I think City Hall is its own thing and the newsletter and the social media are the separate one. So instead of City Hall and social media together, move social media down by newsletter. That's what I tried to say. I'm not sure that's how I said it.
Okay.
So what's your change?
So it says, I'm sorry, I'm not looking at it, but I had indicated that there were different levels, City Hall being one versus social media versus newsletter, and City Hall and social media, it indicates that I think those are the same, and I don't. I think City Hall is its own thing, and then I think social media and newsletter is the next thing together.
Okay, I have a change on 142. Again, these are good minutes, but I don't fault the person that took the minutes, but I think what I said was just nonsensical. So you might just want to delete it. Because it says, Councilmember Baskin spoke on one issue that people may park in the bike lane and said there must be a red curb and a bike lane designation. I don't know what that meant.
That sense.
Does it?
Yeah. No. It needs to have the painting on the street and on the curb.
Right. Well, that's, yeah. It's, okay, let's say that. They park in the bike lane and said there must be a red curb. Okay. And a, how about a bike
lane marker.
A bike lane marker
there we go.
On the street.
Makes sense.
Okay.
That would be better.
Can I also just add an apostrophe to line 614? Because nonprofits, it actually should be nonprofit apostrophe S because it's their interpretation.
Anything else?
Thank you for not making me look like a crazy person.
Yeah, same.
Mayor, I'm ready to make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the City Council approve meeting minutes for work session and City Council meeting on August 1st, 2023, with noted changes.
I'll second it.
Motion is second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Action items?
Can I ask about this memo that was added by Heidi? Thank you for doing that. That is so helpful, such good information, and that was a really fast turnaround. Can I ask you, roughly in the city, if we were to adopt something like this, I didn't make it clear what I'm talking about, the Woods Cross contact that you made with veterans and utilities. About how much cost is there for an average household in North Salt Lake in utilities? If we were to adopt something like this, what would be the cost per year per household, roughly, very rough?
So to explain a little bit more, so Woods Cross does have a program for vets that have 100% disability to get an entire waiver of the utility bill, and it's all portions, the water, storm, garbage, recycling, anything else they might charge. I would say for an average home with, gosh, that's really difficult as far as irrigation and whatnot, maybe $1,500 with a single garbage can, a recycle bin. One thing I was thinking as you were asking that question, we could reach out to the county and see. The county runs a similar program for tax abatement, and it's based on percent disability, and they might be able to tell us how many of our residents are actually at that 100% that are taking advantage of that property tax. We could know what our total exposure would be. But otherwise than that, I wouldn't know really how we could calculate what that cost would be to implement something similar.
Can I make a suggestion for the future with regard to action items? I think it would be helpful if the staff reported on which line items receive a change from our previous council meeting. You don't need to do a dramatic reading or even detail what's on that line. But if you do that, then I think that it will help us focus in on what we should be looking at.
We could just even have an asterisk on the notes.
Little star in front of the ones that have changed.
We just take them off without telling you guys. I mean, that's why you're always asking to put stuff back on. So.
I don't know if this is an action item or if this is something that I would bring up in a different space, but I would love to have a work session discussion with the council where we talk about the findings of the well-being survey and make choices on where or how we would want to implement any action based on that. And I don't know what the time frame would be for that. That's definitely something the Health and Wellness Committee will bring up, but I would love to hear feedback from council members about that.
I'll endorse your idea just as a duo.
So, in my mind, the wellness committee should come back to us with some kind of recommendations. Is that?
We definitely will do that. I don't want whatever ideas the wellness committee comes up with to be the entire scope of what the council may feel like matters if we miss something or
sure.
It's not on a topic that
yeah,
you
sure.
would have really wanted. So that would be the only other piece. So we could have that conversation when the wellness committee has recommendations, and then we can just add a discussion onto the side of that to add any
okay.
other pieces.
Great. Thank you. Anything else on action items? Let's go to council reports. Start with Ted.
Nothing tonight, Mayor.
Nothing for me.
I guess nothing for me.
I'll go really fast. Nothing for me either, Stan.
A lot of
You're
stuff
gonna
from
disappoint
me.
You're going to disappoint us.
I am, but I actually don't have a lot of stuff. I want to remind the council about our two upcoming cultural heritage events. The next is August 28th at Legacy Park. It is the Asian American and Pacific Islander event. And then the last one for the year is September 25th, the Latino and Hispanic Heritage Night. And one fun update about those is I've partnered with the Latinos in Action Committee at the junior high, which is staffed by junior high students, and they are going to act as kind of the operating chair of that event and help plan it. So I'm meeting with them to do that. They also have some students that will be helping with the first event as well, the Asian American Pacific Islander event. So please join us if you're available.
Which junior high?
Mule Park.
Okay.
Thank you. City Attorney Report, Todd, do you have anything for us?
I do not, Mayor.
Thank you. I really don't have a lot. I did want to report that Brad Wilson, Speaker of the House, reached out and came and met with me and didn't really have an agenda other than just, I think he wanted us to know that he's paying attention. And I told him, I reported to him that they needed to have more faith in the local government to run things.
Way to go. Okay, but also agenda is that he's running for Senate.
Oh, is he? Okay. I wondered about that, too.
He's also being sued.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, I think Ken and I have met with Bountiful City, but I'm going to let Ken report on that.
Yeah, I'll report on it if you want. Are we to me? Okay. Just a reminder that we have our ULCT conference coming up. That'll be really great. Everybody's registered that wants to be registered, which is good. We have I would announce that on the 24th of August, some of the city staff is going to do a site visit at Mill Creek Commons, which is where their new city hall and their new very cool outdoor gathering area is. And I just thought, and Wendy reminded me, that we probably should mention this to you guys. And if you want to join us, it's at 11:30 a.m. And this invitation came out of our RFP process for Hatch Park. We had one of the landscape architects and the designers of Mill Creek Commons reach out and say, by the way, if you want to come and look at a cool urban design space, and we thought that would be great. So the 24th, which is next Thursday, 11:30 a.m., if you want to go, please let Wendy know, because if three or more of you want to go, we have to post that as a meeting. Well,
how long do you anticipate the site visit?
I think an hour or less.
Okay. I would like to go.
Okay. And Lisa, you'd like to go?
I would also like
Natalie?
To go.
Natalie? Okay. All right. Well, that's all we need to know. We'll post it. Sorry. So on our meeting with Bountiful City, we talked about a number of things, which I won't report on everything. Their position on a joint meeting is that they would love to have dinner with us, and but they would not be willing to have a working council, joint council meeting with us. They suggested that if we have items of mutual interest, which include, we told them that our items of mutual interest were active transportation and a connection, a bike trail related to our pilot project, where we would start in North Salt Lake, maybe on Orchard Drive, end up on 200 West in Bountiful, and end at the rec center. So we'd have a logical starting point and ending point. They suggested getting some staff and elected officials. We'll think about how that's going to work. Specifically, we mentioned that you Ted, had an interest, anyway, that's so. We'll more on the subcommittee. We'll put a group together to talk about that. They have, as you know, they have initiated general plan updates, as we have also, so we may have some mutual issues there about connecting through the city. And I think that's it, Mayor.
Quick question, was the Wood Museum brought up?
Yes, we did bring up the Wood Museum.
We're all going to take a tour of it.
You know, we told them we were so proud of the golf course, we're going to have dinner at the golf course, and which means it's on us, and probably.
And there is there's a real risk of having Kate and Ted together colluding.
Yeah, they mentioned Kate. Well, we said, you know, Ted and Kate are, I said to them, Ted and Kate are talking to each other, so we really need to respond to this because, you know, I have pressure from Ted. They have pressure from Kate. So anyway, the subcommittee is a good idea. We also discussed libraries. That was the purpose of the meeting, because both communities have been invited to a closed county commission meeting, one at a time, to discuss our separate library proposals. We made a proposal, you might remember, to the county commission, offering this site immediately next to City Hall, this amphitheater site right out these doors, and a site in Hatch Park. And Bountiful has made a similar offer on their City Hall campus for a property trade. And they want to discuss those things further. I won't say whether they're allowed to go into closed session. They just said they would be closed sessions. I'll let them worry about whether they're meeting the law or not. We've just been invited to attend and discuss our proposal one at a time with the county.
Can you just let them know that the new residents of North Salt Lake from the unincorporated area that has been incorporated would really benefit from a library at Hatch Park?
I'll remind them that they owe us a favor.
They owe us a huge favor.
So I don't know if you want me to say more about that. It was really good for the mayors and the city managers to meet, the four of us to meet. So
would it be possible to have, like, substantive discussions based on the First Amendment at this dinner?
Of course.
Okay.
We have no need for a closed session tonight. Anything else before we adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.